This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, non-burdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, wonderful. Yes, so sometimes it sounds a bit more sonorous than at other times. So it is something which can be nice for us to uplift our hearts when the chanting works out, but I realize that very often my voice is hard to follow. Some of the monastics, it works out fine. With other monastics, it doesn't work out that well. We just had a retreat recently, and there were three of us, and we also came from different monasteries. So there was a nun from Dhammasara Monastery and two monks from Bodhinyana Monastery. So the first day it was all off key. But then on the second day we kind of found each other. But what is much, much more important is actually what those words mean and what they create in our hearts. So I thought I would be sharing a few things about the recent retreat that I just ran, a few of the experiences, and just let you know what's kind of going on there. And then I have my bucket here that has some surprises in there, so I'll explain how that works afterwards. Some of the monastics, they sometimes bring some props, and I used to be a primary school teacher in the past, so I'm kind of used to these things. And I also used to do acting, and props are kind of a good thing to have for an actor there. So the retreats that I've been running for 2 years now, and that are designed for beginners, and when I thought about how to kind of advertise them, I came up with the title of Relax and Grow, because I was trying to kind of put into that title for people what meditation is kind of about. And those two terms are quite a nice way for me to put it together, because meditation has a few aspects that we have to kind of develop. It's not just, well, sometimes you can take one word and take it in your heart and maybe feel what meditation is about, but relax and grow was something which kind of brought it on the point for me, because both those aspects are required. So relaxation is something which I think is very, very important, because we are often very tense. And even if people who come to the retreat just learn to relax, just learn to sleep, just learn to look after their bodies, it's already very, very good. So even if they just get that, they will come back home refreshed and they will be in a better state. But meditation has a bit more to offer than just the relaxation part. Meditation also means that we are developing certain things, that we are recognizing certain things, that we are starting to feed them in our minds and nurture them like we nurture little plants. So when we would just kind of relax, then what might happen is that we do fall asleep. And that is actually a very, very natural response that very often happens to new people, and that also happens, you know, here or at the monastery or with everyone, because sometimes we are just tired. But we come to a point where the tiredness kind of wears out, or where the tiredness is gone, because we've done for the body what we needed to do for it. And then it's important that we start to develop the positive qualities of the mind, the things that will give the mind clarity and will give the mind an energy so that we don't just fall asleep. Also, what sometimes happens when we relax too much is, and we don't have something to kind of to hold on to or to inspire ourselves, then we start the process of just ruminating, for example, about all sorts of things. And that was one of the things that people mentioned at that retreat who were new to meditation, to what do I do with all these thoughts that do arise. What sometimes happens is when we do relax, then all these kind of things that were happening in the past, that were happening in our day-to-day life, they become much, much more apparent to us. And we start to realize how crazy our minds usually are. And then we need this other kind of side of meditation to shift away from that energy and to start to develop something else. So we can also fall into kind of catastrophizing, for example, at those moments where we start to have anxieties because we are not used to just sit there and do nothing, or to have so much stillness, or to have so little going on. We might also start to kind of fantasize and create things in our mind that will give us a little bit of entertainment, but they won't really lead to stillness and peace, what meditation can offer us. So it can be that restlessness starts to be created, or confusion starts to be created. And we were just kind of talking in the car about why that might be so, that these kind of things happen. So the mind is not used to do nothing. So what it is used to, though, is to look for happiness. It actually is constantly looking for happiness. But what we can learn with meditation is to give the mind a happiness that sustains it, gives the mind a happiness that will allow it to settle down and to stay on one object or on something without oscillating all the time and going and searching for things out there in the world. So that is what we are trying to create with the meditation process. So we first of all need an object, something to kind of hold on to a little bit. I know it's in the end we are trying to let go, but it is important to give the mind a little bit of something to settle on. And once it has settled And once it grows confident, and once it kind of becomes comfortable with whatever is happening, then it will start to loosen. And then that relaxation part will come. So the object is one part, which is quite crucial, because if we don't have that, we kind of get lost and we're like, what am I doing here, or what I'm supposed to do, or what is this all about? But then the other part, that is this kind of grow part, that is in that formula, is that we start to learn to see how we are relating to that object or to whatever is arising in our meditation. And if that is something which is uplifting, if that's something which is wholesome, then it will lead the mind to a state of stillness. It will lead the mind to a very, very natural settling. So one of the things that I used as a little mantra for the meditation at the retreat, so maybe if you just want to close your eyes and kind of listen to those words and try to see what they kind of create in your mind while you're just listening to them. Nothing to do. Nowhere to go. Time to relax. But also to let the peace deep inside grow. So you might already get an inkling what that peace might be about. But if not, I'll try to give you a few more words or a few more kind of hints or a little kind of technique that I came up with, how meditation can work to make that peace hopefully a little bit more tangible. And that is the acronym of USA that I started to use for meditation. So the U stands for unburdening. The S stands for settling. And the A stands for arriving. So relaxation for me personally very often means just to unburden myself. So what are we unburdening ourselves from? One of the things we're unburdening ourselves from is the past. Because that's somewhere out there. We are now sitting in here. And it's actually quite far away. And what we're also unburdening ourselves is the future, which is something which is out there once we get out of this room again, but which is not here at present. And Ajahn Brahm had this beautiful simile of a person who is on a journey with a big backpack on, coming to a place which is nice to sit down, or which is nice to stay a little bit. And so this unburdening is like putting down that backpack that we're carrying with us. And in that backpack we have all the things that happened to us in the past. Or we have things that we might want to, you know, create in the future. So we can just imagine to put that down. And when we put that down, then we get a bit more space, we get a bit more air to breathe. Then with meditation, what we are also putting down is we're putting down all these things, all these shoulds, all these things we have to do, usually in day-to-day life, which is talking, for example, which is achieving things, which is managing things, deciding, planning, worrying. That's all things we don't have to do in meditation. And when we realize that they are actually heavy, we can put them down. We can unburden ourselves from them. We can also unburden ourselves from tension, from anxiety, and another important thing, also from expectation. When we're looking at the future and thinking, oh, I want to achieve something, or I want to get somewhere, it's actually something which is heavy to carry. And during the retreat, we did a little kind of ceremony where we took candles and offered the candles. And I told the people they should be thinking of something which they felt they have been carrying with them for a long period of time, and that they want to just put down. And the feedback I got was quite good. So if we can imagine something, or if we have a little ritual we can do, it can support that kind of feeling that happens in the heart. So once we've unburdened, then we have to make sure we don't pick it up again. Because what might happen is we put that backpack down and we go like, did I have that in my backpack? And we go and scramble around and see if it's still there. Or so we have to make sure that we stay at that beautiful moment that we have created with unburdening. And that's when this process of settling can start to happen. And with meditation, as I was saying before, it is useful to have some kind of object where we can rest the mind on, or where we can start to have the mind settle. And I'll just go through the list here to name a few. So one of the things we can settle on that doesn't have to do with the past and the future are our senses. So we are perceiving things, we are hearing things at the moment, we are feeling things. Hopefully we're not smelling or tasting any things at the moment, so those kind of senses are gone. But hearing is usually one of the senses which is quite prominent. When we are seeing, the seeing of course as well, and then the feeling. And I encourage people to settle on the feeling and not to settle on the thought. And we had a discussion with one of the participants at the retreat who came and kind of asked me, well, how do I do that? And I said, well, you just feel. So as we are sitting here, we can direct our mind, for example, to our feet. And we can just feel our feet. And as it were, try to let the mind settle in that area of the body. And when it stays there for a little while and it's open enough, then it will actually feel what's happening. But then the person said, well, but that's all going through my brain and I'm just thinking about this. And I said, well, of course, if you kind of go like, okay, how does it feel? Is it hard? Is it soft? Is it tingling? Is it warmth? Yes, that is a thought. But there is still a feeling going on. We can just connect with our feet and just kind of go like, oh, what's going on here? So we can connect with our bodies. But we can also connect with our thoughts or our emotions. That might be a bit more difficult now. So when you settled your mind on your feet, it's something I guess everyone can kind of do. Now, it's a bit more challenging to try and feel your thoughts. And what I sometimes encourage people to do is to not think about the thought that much, to try to feel the impact of that thought. And that's something we can feel in our body, but that is something we can also, when we're a bit more practiced, start to feel in our mind. We can kind of feel the texture of what that creates in our mind. We can feel, is it something which settles us? Is it something which is restless? Is it something which brings joy in our minds? And then we can, of course, also settle on the breath. On the breath going in and on the breath going out. But that is an object that is often quite subtle and quite difficult to settle on. So that's why it comes a bit further down on that list. And also when we do, for example, walking meditation, of course, then we would be settling on our feet that are moving. So the process of meditation is picking an object and then trying to stay with that object. But if there isn't any interest or any kind of happiness, then it's very, very difficult. So one of the things that has helped me in the beginning a lot is to connect the object with the movement. Because the movement is something which is happening in time and which is happening for a longer period of time. And that's why I brought this bucket, and that's why that's what the meditation is going to be. So it's going to be a body sweep meditation, but connected with a certain movement, which should help you to stay with that object that we're looking at for a bit longer. And then if that settling does happen, so if we manage to stay with our body or to stay with our mind for a certain period of time, even if it might not be that long, then we start to realize that we start to arrive. So it's like with that person who put down the backpack, who sat down, and if that person sits down for long enough, he'll start to be able to appreciate what's happening around. And that's that kind of grow part that is important. So what is this arriving like, and what is the things that we should be enjoying when they arise? So we start to be aware of the present moment, and the present moment will start to become a pleasant moment when we stay with it long enough. Because then we will start to feel that ease and the relaxation that we were creating beforehand. And we will also start to realize that the mind will start to have a certain clarity and the wakefulness. And that's very, very important in meditation. That will keep us there for longer. And we will also start to be aware that there is a stillness and the peace that arises in that process. Very often it's also helpful to reflect on things that are absent, on the things that we have put down, on the things that we have let go of. And that will also help us to create a pleasant feeling. Okay, let's get to my bucket that I've brought today, and the props that I've brought as well. I am not usually a monk who goes to the workshop a lot, so the workshop master was wondering what I'm doing in the workshop. And I said I'm getting some props for the Armadale meditation group. I'm going to do a body painting meditation. But don't worry, we're just imagining these things, and it's just happening in our minds, so don't spread that around too far, otherwise Ajahn Brahm will never send me back to the Armadale meditation group again. But imagination is often something which can help us to bring our minds in a certain mind state that can be helpful for meditation. So for painting, we do need a thing to put the paint in, of course. And then we also need some brushes. And this is a very helpful tool as well. The, I don't know, a roller thing for painting, a roller painting thing. Okay. And then, of course, we need our paint. And the paint needs to be mixed, first of all. So I've collected a few things in the monastery, because there's quite a lot around in the monastery of these kind of things. So let's start with the first one there. So the first ingredients that we need is interest, curiosity, and awareness. So I've put there a little monkey who's kind of looking with interest. So that would be kind of the mindfulness part that we talk about a lot. But now the kind of other part, which are those feelings that glue us to the meditation object, or that help us to stay with the meditation object, would be this one. That is care, kindness, and warmth. So we'll have a little heart there. Wonderful. And then the other one, which brings to mind those more kind of positive, joyful states, is the gratitude part and the rejoicing. So I also have a picture there. So we mix those things in there. Eh? A little bit of each. Wonderful. And now, when we will be doing our body sweep, I wish you to imagine that you are doing what I've kind of brought up to the table here, that we will kind of mentally pick up one of those brushes and dip it in to this solution, and then start painting our body with that solution. And I encourage you to really feel that. So I don't know if it might look crazy when you go back home, but I tried it for myself as well. So to actually pick up a brush and put it on your body and kind of go like, how does that feel when I go over that part of my body with that brush? Because that can help you to do the same thing with your mind. And the movement was something that really, really helped me in the beginning. Because what very often happens in meditation when we start off is that we have an object and we turn our attention to that object and then we're gone. And then we remember, oh, okay, we're meditating here, okay, I'm doing something else now. I can unburden myself and I'll now go back to my meditation object. So when you're doing a body sweep, you notice it much more because you're like, where was I in my body? And then you realize, oh, I missed out on a certain part. But now with this brush painting thing, I imagine that I'm moving with my attention like I would be moving with the brush on my body. And that movement gives the mind a certain... it makes it more steady, it helps it to settle, and it gives it a certain stability so that I can kind of continuously stay with that object. And then of course I took a few tools, because depending on where we are on the body, it's helpful to use different ones. And I've mentally used for myself this kind of roller painter thing, especially for the lower parts of the body. For the face and the head, it's kind of helpful for me to imagine something like a brush, which is a bit more subtle. And then I'll do the rest with the roll. So the props are here. Hopefully you can kind of imagine that a bit more in your mind that way. And I'll be guiding you through a meditation now using these kind of tools. So remember, we have the paint that consists of an interest, of an awareness that is there. And then we have this kind of feeling aspects, these joyful aspects of caring, of kindness, and of warmth, and also of gratitude. And rejoicing basically means that when we find something in our body which is pleasant, which is good, so that we don't just brush that away, that we actually rejoice that it is there, that we allow it to become bigger, that we allow it to be there in our minds, then it's easier for our minds to settle on it. Okay, so we will be turning off the lights for the meditation. Wonderful. So first of all, if you're not comfortable already, try to find a posture which is comfortable for your body. It helps to have your feet on the ground and feel that groundedness. It also helps to be fairly straight, but without, you know, strain, just to have a certain wakefulness in the body already. So this meditation is really meant for beginners, so I will be talking quite a bit. So if you are experienced with meditation and your mind gets peaceful, then just ignore my voice, or just kind of think it's like the rain in the background or the traffic in the background, and just go deep within and in peaceful states. But otherwise I'll talk you through the process and guide you through the process. So maybe just breathe deeply for 3 times or so to relax your body. to give your nervous system the information that it's safe, it's now time to be at ease. And if there is anything you can do for your body right now to make it more comfortable, please do that. Wiggle it around a bit or scratch if you need to scratch. Adjust. And then imagine picking up that brush and dipping it into the paint. And then we'll just draw a line on the top of our head, maybe from where the hair is starting to grow at the front. We slowly paint a line that goes to the tip of the head. And imagine that brush moving along. And as it moves along, you can feel what the paint is. You can feel that warmth, that care, that interest. And you might even feel as if that part would be getting a little bit wet. Great, so we've made the first contact with the body. That's sometimes it's a bit cold and you're like, oh, what is that? But we're getting used to it now. And then we start on the right side of the head, where the ear is, and just from the top, paint all the way down, over the ear. And then we do the same thing, but move backwards, slowly towards the back of the head. So we just draw another line. And when we reach the neck, we maybe dip it into the paint again and start the next line. And that way we're moving around the back of the head. Reaching the left side of the head. Until we are on the other opposite end of the head where the left ear is. Great, and then you might be able to feel that whole part that we've painted now with kindness, care, awareness. And then we turn to the face. And let's paint our forehead. And as we move along with the brush, feel that area. And feel how it relaxes. Same with the nose. And the eyes. Right cheek and the left cheek. And also the mouth. let's do one big stroke from the right ear to the left ear, over the whole jaw. All the way around. And if you can, try to stay with the movement of the brush. And then once you've painted the area, just feel the effect. Feel the paint. And feel the results of that paint. What those mental states actually feel like. And the paint also has this hint of gratitude in it, which is this beautiful mind state which says thank you to that body part that we are painting. And the thank you leads that body part to relax and be at ease. Okay, so the next stroke will be a very long one, so we have to dip into the solution there. And then we start at the top of the head and we make our way all the way down the neck and we follow the spine. All the way down to the hips, touching the chair. Try to do that one vertebra by one vertebra. Slowly but steadily moving down the whole spine. Soaking it, drenching it with kindness, with gratitude, with curiosity. As you're going along, feeling the effect. And also when you're finished, like a painter looks at the artwork, enjoying it. Great, you might have noticed that your spine straightened up a little bit all by itself, that the muscles relaxed. And we dip it in the paint again, our brush, and then we do the same thing but on the opposite end of the body, at the front side, So we start at our chin and go all the way down the neck and the front of the body, following the spine again, so to speak, but on the other side. Over the chest. Down to the belly button. All the way down to the hip, to our bottom that is touching the chair or the mat. Wonderful, I hope we're getting the hang of it by now, so we can change the tool and now get the roller thingy. That covers a bit more ground at once. And then we start on the right side of the neck. And roll down. Over the neck, over the shoulder, and then we follow the outer side of the arm. So down the upper arm, around the elbow, down the hard side, so to speak, the back of the hand, of the arm, lower arm there. Feel the movement and then rolling down the back of the hand . Can you feel the difference in your right arm already? Let's do the inside now. So we dip the roller in again. And then we apply the paint on the inside of the upper arm. Moving down the lower arm. Bit by bit. Until we reach the palm of the hand. we can take the little brush again and do each finger, all the five fingers, right to the tip of all the five fingers. Can you feel the paint on your right hand and the difference between the right and the left hand? That's what happens when we apply love, interest, and gratitude to a part of our body. Let's do the left side now. Outside of the arm first. From the neck. Over the shoulder. Down to the elbow, the outer side of the lower arm. Until we reach the back of the hand. Once we're done, feel how it feels, that painted area. And then we can move to the inside. Upper arm. Inside of the elbow, over the lower arm, to the palms. Left side. And we again paint each finger. From the base to the tip. Now both arms will feel warm, relaxed, at ease. We've already done the middle part of the back, so we now just maybe do three lines with the roller, the right side of the back, from the shoulder all the way down to the hips. And if you can, try to stay with the movement. And feel where you are in the body. I guess we're still somewhere on the right side of the back. And once we're done, we can do the left side. We get distracted, no problem. We just pick up that roller painter again, put it in the paint, and carry on where we left off. We're painting the left side off the back at the moment. And when we're done, just feel the whole entire back that we've just painted. And let's do the same on the front side of the body, starting on the right. From the top down to the bottom, over the chest, the belly, all the way down to where the legs start. for some reason we put down that roller painter, we just pick it up again and carry on painting where we left off. Painting the body with kindness, with gratitude, with curiosity and interest, what's happening there. So by now, I guess the right side is all painted, freshly painted, nice and relaxed. Now we can do the left side. We can put our minds, as it were, on that roller, feeling the movement from the top down across our skin. So hopefully by now we've done two or three stripes down the left side on the front. And since we're getting close to the time to end the meditation, let's just feel all those parts that we've painted. Try to feel them as an entirety. The whole head, the neck, the face. The arms, the shoulders, the back all the way down to the hips, and the front, the chest, the belly, down to the hips. I hope you could really drench all that part of the body with these beautiful qualities. And now you can gaze at the artwork and let it really sink in. I'll be ringing to gong 3 times for you to slowly come out of your meditation. Okay, so we couldn't quite paint the whole body. So very often when I do a body sweep in that way, it does take me 45 minutes or sometimes even an hour. And yeah, depending on how many times we drift off, it might take even longer. But it is one of those techniques that can help us to settle and stay with an object, maybe for a bit longer. One of the similes that is used in the commentaries as well for this kind of process is the ringing of the gong. So we have a movement of the mind towards the object, and that is described as like the hitting of the gong bonger or whatever that's called of the singing bowl, and then the reverberation of the singing bowl, the sound of the singing bowl, that is the settling, that is the remaining of the mind with the meditation object. And in that little meditation, it was kind of the movement that was the ringing of the gong, and the dipping into the paint and then applying the paint, so to speak, is like the movement of the mind towards that object. And there it might be a bit easier than when we are dealing with things in the mind. But in the mind, this gong kind of simile might be a bit more useful, because then it's not the actual physical body that we are feeling. It's more a reverberation of the way we looked at something, or the reverberation of the mind state and what it has created in the mind. So I didn't have time to do that, but that would be kind of like the next step when you are moving into more refined things, when you're moving into the mental world. So once you've worked with your body, very often when I meditate these days, I spend less time with the body, but I do spend time with the body in the beginning. And then when I'm kind of moving to this mental world, I try to imagine that my mind is a little bit like a body as well. But now the tensions that would be in the physical body would be the tensions that are present in the mind. So if there is thinking, for example, or if there are emotions in that mental body, so to speak, that would be like something which is hard, which is not relaxed. And then you kind of like striking this bowl. You're not striking your mind, because that sounds a bit violent. But I thought about it, it's like stroking your mind. You're stroking your mind with these beautiful qualities of the paint. And while you're doing that, it starts to sing. Like the singing bowl starts to sing. It starts to create a feeling. It starts to create something wholesome that is reverberating in the mind. And then you try to have it sing as long as possible. Venerable Metaji, one of the monks, he has a singing bowl that is very beautiful. It's quite a big one. I was considering if I should bring it. Maybe I can bring it another time. And you do hit it. And it really takes maybe 1 minute, 1.5 minutes, when you listen very carefully or when you're very close and it's on the right surface, it carries on reverberating for a long period of time. But when we don't have that relaxation that I was talking about before, so if we don't have that singing bowl on that cushion here where it's supposed to be, but we grab it really tightly, then it just goes beep, and that's it. So we do need both parts there. We need that kind of relaxation, the space that we create around the thing, and then we need the right movement towards the body or towards the mind, which are those beautiful mind states, and they stroke it in the right way. And then we just relax and stay with that. And we stay with it as long as possible. So our job is not to be controlling it all the time and bonging it all the time. So we do it once with as much care and attention as we can. And then we try to stay with it as long as possible. Is there any questions in the box or no? Because otherwise I thought I might expand a little bit on a question that was kind of brought up at the retreat. Do we have anything?
No.
Okay. So the one of those themes that caught me a bit off guard. I started to kind of think about it and reflect about it, thinking about thinking, because people were saying how they could deal with thinking in meditation. So one thing is already what I've kind of presented and what has helped me with that kind of movement. But there is a few kind of other things that can be done. So when we are dealing with thoughts in meditation, one of the skillful ways to deal with them is to substitute those thoughts with something which is wholesome. So that's what I was talking about before. So the mind is unhappy. Because it's unhappy, it starts to think. If it were happy, it would just be there and do nothing and just enjoy it. So it is looking for happiness. And if we can create that happiness in our mind and let the mind settle on that happiness, then we can shift our attention. But it has to be beautiful enough. And in meditation practice, we have these wonderful states called the Brahma Viharas. And that was the topic of, or the theme of the retreat. And that's kind of like a fire that we are starting to kindle in our own minds. And when we can kindle it enough and make it strong enough, then that will be something that will grasp or kind of allow the attention to settle on it quite naturally. And I was trying to teach those four states to the people at the retreat in a bit more kind of modern fashion, when we start to talk about Pali words, sometimes people go like, oh, what is this, and I don't understand this. So instead of using metta, karuna, mudita and upekkha, even though I've also put them in there, I use the terms love, because that's one of those words that we hear a lot and maybe don't understand that properly. And then I like to use the word care for the second one. And for the third one, I'm getting lost there, Karuna, mudita, that's right. I like to use the word joy. And for the last one, I like to use the word balance. And these states are states that naturally arise in a mind when meditation works. But very often it's useful to bring them about to also bring us into that meditation. So, for example, with love, the problem in our world is often that we are looking for love and that we are thinking, how can we get love out there? We have certain expectations and we go looking around, like the mind goes looking around, searching for things. Instead of realizing that love is actually a quality of the heart and that love is created in our own heart, and that when we are loving, that we actually have that love. And then we are not dependent on people to give us that love. And one way to create those feelings in our hearts is to focus on something which brings them up easily in our mind. And then it's helpful to choose an object that we have no trouble with creating, kindling that feeling of love within ourselves. And for some people, that might be a pet. I don't know if some of you have pets at home, and they're just so lovely that it is very, very easy to think of us being with that pet, or stroking that pet, or that pet coming up to us like a cat, just wanting to be with us, or a dog wagging its tail. And then we are creating those feelings. And that is like striking the meditation ball. And so we try to kindle those feelings again and again. And if it's something which brings them up very easily, then we can kindle them so strongly that there comes a point where they can be maintained for a longer period of time. And that can then become our meditation object. So that would be the metta meditation. And other very, very useful kind of tool is the upekkha part there. Very often when we talk about balance, it's quite difficult to understand what that exactly means. And when I was asking Ajahn Brahm, when I was preparing for that retreat, what would be your word for this balance? And he said, for me, the word is contentment. And when we do have contentment in our minds, then the movement which is created through those thoughts can't even be created. Because as I was saying before, we are so happy to be in that place at that time without wanting to be anywhere else, that settling will happen quite naturally. Okay. Yeah, maybe I actually do tell that one story, because it's such a nice story to kind of bring across what contentment really means. It's one of the stories that I really, really like that Ajahn Brahm has told. And that is the story of the wishing game. There were five kids, and those five kids had to come up with a wish. And the aim of the game is to come up with the best wish. So the first child didn't have that much time, so it quickly thought, and it was a cold day, it was a winter day, we're getting into winter now, and the first thing that came to mind was, if I had a wish, I would wish for a hot chocolate, because it's a cold day and I like hot chocolate. So the kid said, okay, yeah, that's a good wish to start off with. But can we think of a wish which is better than this first wish? So the second child had a little bit more time to think. So I thought, how can I make a better wish than that first wish? And it said, well, you know, with that hot chocolate, you just get it, you drink it, and it's nice, but then it's gone. But I wish for a hot chocolate factory, or I wish for a coffee shop. Because if I owned a coffee shop, then I could go to that coffee shop anytime. And I could just get as many hot chocolates as I wanted, because, you know, I'm the owner. And I just go and get it. Or even if it's late at night, you know, I can open the shop, it's my shop, anytime, and get my hot chocolate. Okay, that was definitely a better wish. So the third child had to think even harder. And it thought, it thought, it thought. It said, well, if I had a wish, I would wish for $1 million. Because if I have $1 million, I can have hot chocolate all the time. I can even buy my, you know, own hot chocolate shop. And I can have my own school, for example, as well. So I don't have to do that much homework. And I will be the principal of the school as well. So I can, you know, let myself off. And I can play video games, what I like to do. So with that money, I can basically do almost whatever I want to do. Because it's so much money. It's so hard to spend. Okay, better wish. And even harder again for the next kid. But the next kid thought a little bit, and then it realized, oh yes, there is a wish. I think that one is better. And it said, if I had a wish, I would wish for 3 wishes. Because if I had 3 wishes, I could have whatever I wanted. You know, I could have a cheese sandwich, if I feel like having a cheese sandwich. I could also have $1 million, like that other child. And, you know, basically, I'm paid off for my life, and I can do with that money whatever I want to do. But then, with my third wish, I would wish for another 3 wishes. And if I do that, I just can carry on wishing all the time. And that is basically what happens with thinking very often. We start thinking, and then we start thinking about something else, and something else, and something else, and it just carries on and on and on and on and on. It's like having this endless wish list. And the last child, which Ajahn Brahm sometimes says is like the little Buddha child, realized the problem with all this wishing. And it said, if I had a wish, I wish that I would be so contented that I wouldn't have to wish for anything. And that is really what meditation, or what the whole Buddhist path is about. And that's when we can realize that that's what is happening with thinking, that it is promising us so much, but that it is just going on and on and on and on and on and on, and that it is just endless. That it is not leading anywhere, then we will be able to put these thoughts down and return to where we actually are, to start to appreciate what is there, to start to be happy and contented. And one kind of good mantra that Ajahn Brahm gives for that is good enough. Because wishing always wishes something more, wishes something different. And good enough is the movement in the opposite direction. Okay, I guess we're getting close. Unless someone has a question, just which is not on a piece of paper. Oh, yes.
That's what's wrong, man. Ignore it.
Ah.
Keep going.
Okay. Well, was that a question? It wasn't a question. Is there any question that someone has?
I have a question.
Yes, please.
direction, what that first part that you read us of the three words, I think?
Yes, unburden, settle, and arrive.
Yeah. Do you have that written down somewhere? So I can...
Not really. It's...
Oh, on the thing.
It is recorded.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, but if you can kind of remember the story that goes around it, then it should be able for you to bring it up in your mind. So USA, the land of freedom, supposedly. So we are aiming at the real freedom here. And so that can remind you of that.
Yeah.
And then if you have that journey, so you come from the journey of your life with this heavy backpack.
Yeah.
So the first thing is you unburden. You put the things down. And you realize that now thinking is not useful. Because what happens with thinking very often is it keeps coming, it keeps coming, it keeps coming. And once you've meditated for a while, you start to realize that certain patterns come again and again and again. And you go like, okay, I've thought this thought before. And this could be the solution, for example. Or I don't have any solution. But it's not useful to just keep rethinking it. But if it comes back, we have to keep putting it down. And then the next part is to settle. To start to settle. And the contentment, for example, is an energy that can help us to settle. Or those positive mind states that we are creating. Every time you put something down, it feels pleasant. Relaxation feels pleasant. And if you can kind of settle your mind on that. And then the third part is something which happens quite naturally, the arriving. Once you have settled at a certain spot, then you start to become aware of what's happening around you, and you start to be able to appreciate the scenery, for example. But if you don't settle, if you pick up your backpack and start running away again, then that doesn't happen. So yeah, maybe that kind of picture can help. So we do have time, or I don't know what the clock is doing there.
I'm sorry, I was teasing.
Ah, okay, that's what happened. Okay, there will be another occasion, but you do have two more opportunities with the monks. Next week it will most likely be someone from the monastery at Serpentine, and then the week after, because we are already starting to enter the Rains Retreat, our 3 months Rains Retreat, and the monastics here from the Kelmscott Vihara, I don't know which one is coming, have offered to come and teach that session before we go into our Rains Retreat. And then you have a roster of people coming and sharing during that time. But you're welcome at the monastery. We are always there 365 days a year to just come and enjoy the peace, or even to just come and talk to one of the monastics. If you have a question, the senior monk is always upstairs, but I'm sure that also some of the other monks who are milling around would be happy to answer your question or just have a chat. We will be washing our bowls at the bowl washing area, and we are around, and we are happy to help if we can. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Many techniques and tools, and we can't miss to bring our brain together.